You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Geek Out here on PodcastJuice.net. This is your host, Michael Dean. And today we are joined by a very well-versed guest hosts and house members. First, we're going to start with Big Sexy and Sack. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It's a nice and warm Saturday afternoon in California. And I'm living the life. It's okay today.
All right. And kind of like the... Real quick, just put people's credentials on deck. It's like, you know, when you're watching news programs, they always say, oh, well, we're joined by Big Sexy and Sack, renowned lawyers, sports attorney, blah, blah, blah. So what is your professional?
My credentials?
Credentials.
You're going to start some shit now. Very simple. My credentials are this. I have a bachelor's degree. I have a doctorate in law, which means I'm an attorney, and I'm a member of the State Bar of California, which is the hardest bar association in the nation to become a member of. That's a factual statement. That's just not me blowing smoke. And in addition to that, I have just been certified by the NFL as a player agent, and as we speak, more things are falling into place, and I'm taking over 2014. It's that simple.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. I can't say shit after that, but... I will try to. Next up, we have Mr. Anthony. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing great, fellas. How about yourselves?
Doing good, good.
Good,
and
sir.
Give us a little bit of your background.
Well, right now I handle social media for Konami, makers of Metal Gear, Castlevania, and a whole other classic games that you played on your Nintendo Entertainment System. I used to handle digital entertainment for The Source Magazine, writer for Hustler. I have a current wrestling column, weekly wrestling column, and a weekly comic book column that you all should be reading.
There you go.
I read it.
All right. Well, and what's the column?
The wrestling column is Breaking Kayfabe. Yes, after Breaking Bad, and comics Meatball.
All right, and what site can they find that real quick? Quickly.
Oh, yeah, sorry. They can find the wrestling column on KnockoutNation.com and the comic book column on 411mania.com.
All right, and we've got a new person today, Mr. Sean Hill. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, thank you.
All right, thanks for joining us. Now, Sean is obviously a contributor to... PodcastJuice.net. I don't remember my own name. He does a lot of movie reviews, but I know he has another website. And give us a little bit of your credentials, sir.
I have a master's degree in organizational management, but right now I am seeking employment. So if anybody's hiring, holler at me. I also have a blog, hillstreetviews.blogspot.com, where I cover movie reviews, pop culture. Sometimes I do album reviews. Currently working on a YouTube channel, Real Movie Talk, and also have a Facebook page, Real Movie Talk, there as well. So also avid music fan, avid Prince fan, but I'm sure we'll get into that at another time. I'm honored to be here. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm ready to get into it.
All right. And last but not least, my name is Michael Dean. Man, I don't have all the credentials, but do a little website, Podcast Juice, and let's get it popping. All right. And shout out to
where he's at.
There you go. You know, I've been in the streets, man. You know, shout back, hit, see my buddies kill that little ice tea line. Anyway, shout out to Q Storm. He's not here today. He's AWOL. Not sure where he's at, but we hope he is doing great. Peace out to his family. All right, so let's get into it. Talking about some movies. First one up on deck is the new movie that is out right now. Probably will be the number one movie this week. Ender's Game, which is the movie version of the
Orson Scott Card.
Card, classic sci-fi novel by the same name, Ender's Game. So here is the movie adaptation of this. This also stars Mr. Han Solo himself, Harrison Ford. I had a chance to see this actually yesterday. I had read maybe a half of the book years ago and never finished it. So I sort of knew what the story was about, but I didn't know how it ended. So I kind of went into this a little fresh. I would quickly just say that I actually very much enjoyed this movie. Sci-fi, so that's already going to be sort of, it got me in the door already. But the whole thing with the kids and, like, you know, taking a child and sort of training them to see who is a great strategic person and who can sort of rise to be a leader. I love that sort of stuff. A lot of that sort of stuff reminds me of, like, what I like about prison movies, where it's like, who's going to get punked and like who's going to be, you know, slick talking his way through things. Harrison Ford, you know, he sort of played that hardcore general, you know, push him to the edge and see if that person breaks kind of guy. I thought that was an okay character for him. I just get a kick out of seeing him in a science fiction movie because it just reminds me of like, man, that's what Han Solo is going to look like probably in another couple of years. But what's the black woman's name that's in this movie?
And I Viola Davis.
Viola Davis. Let me say this. They had her looking fine in that movie to me. Like I thought she was like, I'm like, damn, she looked good. In the future, it is, you know, chocolate is in. So
at least we're still there.
Wait, exactly. Viola Davis has always looked good.
Well, yeah, I don't know. To me, she just really stood out.
It's just that they've had her in those roles where they downplay her looks. Okay. I'm sorry, Viola Davis is a nice middle aged woman.
All right, I'll give you that. A little shade there, but I. But back no, to the, but let me just so quickly the movie, the child actor, and I don't know his name, but I thought he did a really good job. When I seen the trailers, I didn't really know how to take the movie. I was like, ah, this looked like this might be trying to cash in on a little bit of the Twilight, Hunger Games sort of audience. But I thought this movie was a lot more smarter and more serious than those. It didn't come across to me as a teen movie, though. As I look back on it, a lot of the scenes dealt with younger people. But I loved it. I loved the lead up to the end. I'm not going to spoil it, but I thought that it asks some very interesting questions about war and you know, how do you deal with different opponents and different things. I was like, wow, kind of deep a little bit, and it made me. I was like, I have to read the other book. You know, there's three books in this particular series. It's like, I have to read the second one because I was very interested to see what happens next with this character, because how it ends, I was like, wow, okay. It's kind of good. I get this. The other part about this I will say is there's a great space battle toward the end, and it just really, really gets me hyped to see Star Blazers, the movie, because and they're on the bridge and guys giving orders. And there's a whole scene in my mind. It was like they fired the wave motion gun. I was like, ah, man, this is what Star Blazers needs to be. This. Go ahead and give that to us now. Are you ready? So I love this movie. It's really good. There are some parts that are slow. I did sort of fall asleep in the middle part. But they got me back. My attention got back and things got heated up. And there's that one little kid. He's actually probably a grown-ass man, but he plays a young boy in this. And I've seen him in something else. He's a little shit. One
of those kind of, like, yes, he is. He is.
And he played that sort of character in something else I can't think of. But he did very well in this. I really wanted to see him. Well, he did get his – they did get his ass, but I wanted to see him get his ass whooped. But that just goes to show how much I really was caring about these characters. Sean Hill, I believe you had a chance to see this movie as well.
Yes, I saw it, and now I'm wondering if we actually saw the same movie.
Uh-oh.
We're in the post-Twilight world. You mentioned that, and actually that's the kind of the first line in my written review is that studios now are scrambling to try to find the next big tween franchise, and this film is definitely in that genre. They want that Twilight money. Is from what I recall from doing some research, the characters in the books are younger in the books than they are in the movie. I think they're I won't say preteens, but they're very young. Here it just seems like they're trying to market that money. I didn't find the lead character that compelling. His name is Acer Butterfield. He also was in Hugo, Martin Scorsese's Hugo. Oh, okay. He was good in that. Not so much here. You mentioned Harrison Ford, and also in my review I said he should probably stay away from sci-fi films unless it has the words Star Wars or Episode in it somewhere in the title. If not, he should probably stay away. I gave it 2 out of 4 stars. I don't know. It just didn't grab me. Did you see it in the IMAX format or regular?
No, I saw it in regular. It was a very good screen, but it definitely was an IMAX.
Yeah, so I saw it in IMAX, and while it looked good, it was too much. It was almost like the director said, okay, I have this big format that I need to fill. Let's fill it with as much stuff as possible. And then you kind of lost some of the details of what you're actually trying to see. You mentioned the end space battle, which I won't go too much into, but in the IMAX, a lot of the stuff you just couldn't, you couldn't see because it was so vast, and that's probably not a great criticism, but not being able to see. But it just, I don't know, it was just too much. And you mentioned the ending. I didn't feel like I got an ending. I feel like I got a setup for a sequel.
I agree with that, yeah.
So I took my 8-year-old daughter to see it, and she just kind of looked at me with this, "That's it?" kind of thing. And I'm like, "Yes, baby, that's it. Maybe in another 2 years, we'll see what happens from there." But I'll be honest though, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan, so it really, really has to be good for me to really get into it. Like I said, I did like Harrison Ford, like Viola Davis. I can't remember the black guy, the sergeant.
Oh yeah.
He was really good. I was wishing they would stuck with him a little bit longer. But for sci-fi fans, I can recommend it because I'm sure, you know, as you're a sci-fi fan, so you enjoyed it. And I could see how sci-fi fans would enjoy it, but just for a regular kind of movie-going guy like me, I couldn't recommend it.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I did like about it, too, just in the lead-up, it showed a lot of little stuff in the background. Like, it wasn't overbearing with the technology, but I just thought it was very interesting, like, that world to me. I was like, man, they really sort of set this up nice. I like some of the stuff, you know, even the games he was playing, like, yeah, I was like, that was kind of cool, and there was the whole mind game they had him playing. Like I said, the universe and the way it's presented to me, I dig that sort of stuff. It wasn't done cheesy, but I don't disagree with a lot of what you said, but I did like it. So,
maybe not that far off then.
Sure. All right. Okay. Well, moving right along from Ender's Game, to me, it's worth going to see. I'll put it that way. Next up, quickly, this is an older movie, but I just got a chance to see this last night. Jobs, which is the Steve Jobs movie. Ashton Kutcher played Steve Jobs. Sat down last night and watched this movie. And first of all, the movie is really long. Second of all, Steve Jobs is an asshole. Like, he is...
Yes.
And a street vernacular, bitch made... F boy. Like, I didn't like him, man.
Damn.
I was really, you know, why I didn't like him was because of the stuff with the daughter. He did her like my man in Menace Society and the girl was pregnant. It's not mine. That means it's not mine. I was like, come on, man. Like, he's just, and then just blatantly dicking his boys out of money. I was like, damn, this is dark. But, you know, so one hand, like, and this is not a critique of the movie. This is a critique of Steve Jobs and the story, if it's true. I was like, man, he cheated out a lot of cats. And he did some foul stuff. Again, he did some remarkable stuff. I can't hate. But when I look at him now, I realize he is he's a hustler. And he's a mouthpiece. And I respect that. There's a part of me that respects a guy that can talk. And knows when he sees opportunities, he knows how to jump on them and flip it and get you behind him. So in one way, he's got a lot of game. And I see why he is heralded the way he is. Kudos to him. If this movie had been about drug dealing and he played the same dude, he would be heralded as a hero in certain parts of the community.
Yeah.
You're like, he's okay. And, you know, he flipped up his style when the shit went corporate. And he was like, let me shave off the beard on these Negroes and come in here and get this paper with the suit. I was like, get him, Steve. You know, I was like, yeah. And screwing cats out of the paper. But going back to the movie itself, too long. And I just didn't feel like it really told a story that I wanted to see. Like, it was cool to see that he's an ass. But you don't start the movie showing the introduction of the iPod and then don't show how they come to that. Through the whole movie. Yeah, I was so irritated. I was like, I want to know how they created the iPod and that whole process. I don't care about the Apple II and all that. I mean, that's cool, but the breakthrough shit is you don't start the movie with something and never give it a payoff. So for that, I didn't like the movie because I was like, ah, man.
I liked the movie, but I had the exact same criticism. They drop hints as him coming up with the iPod. Mm-hmm. Remember, he was messing with the cassette
player. Yeah.
But yeah, to not show how he actually or how his team actually came up with that idea, I think did a disservice to the film, especially since they started with that.
Exactly.
But the thing that I like the film, and I liked it based on the strength of Ashton's performance. And I hope that the Academy will remember him when they get the ballots here in a few months. I think it's an Oscar-level performance. He probably won't get nominated. I doubt it, just because of his history, right. You know, with Dude, Where's My Car and Punked and stuff like that. But and Mike, you may agree with me. At the very beginning, when he walks out, did you think that was him, or did you think that was archival footage?
Yeah, I thought it was. Even throughout the movie, I lost that was Kirsten Tucker. How do you say? To me, it was Steve Jobs in the movie. Like his voice. The way he spoke, I was like, he nailed it.
Yeah. It was almost like Jamie Foxx and Ray. Now, I'm nowhere comparing the two performances, but it was the nuances that he captured.
There you go.
The way he walked, the way he gestured, the way he, you know, would stroke his beard, that kind of thing. The way his walk, he embodied that role. But I agree with you. A lot of it was kind of tedious, and it did go on a little bit long. But just watching him, I'm like, this is a good performance. The movie's worth seeing for his performance. And again, I hope he gets a nomination. I doubt it, but if he does, I'd be extremely happy.
All right, yeah, that's definitely interesting. I want people who see it who just think that this guy is the most genius, gifted dude. Like, no, yeah, but there's a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people behind him
who did the real work. It's like, come on now. All right. So next up is something that we've all seen. There's a new trailer for another Marvel movie. DC, they're putting the pressure on you. X-Men, Days of Futures Past trailer has been revealed. This movie is directed by Bryan Singer. Anthony, you saw this trailer. What did you think about it? Any thoughts?
I'm kind of mixed emotions on here as I do like some of the images they put up on there, especially the future selves of Professor X, Magneto, Wolverine, and Storm. But the storyline, and I read this somewhere, the storyline is too psychological, too character-driven, too emotion, too talking, and not enough action. It's like they feel like the best parts of the Nolan trilogy was all of the character development, all the character dialogue, and all the depiction that was on the screen, as opposed to, you know, when you have an X-Men films with all these superpowers. And I understand that with Hollywood and with budgets, you can't do this big all-encompassing battle, although Avengers did it. So you do have the talking points, which is a mainstay of the X-Men comics. But to me, it just felt like, okay, we have this storyline and we're going to twist it up just a little bit and not bring, you know, which was the heart of Days of Futures Past. And again, it's more of Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah, I sort of see what you're saying. Somebody got to turn their speaker down. There we go. All right. Big Sexy, what was your thoughts on the trailer?
You know, I have to co-sign what I just heard, because if you look at the credits, it says, what is his name, the Wolverine guy?
Hugh Jackman.
Thank you. It says Hugh Jackman above the title. So right there, that tells you this is a Wolverine movie, and everybody else is in there just for laughs. Now, my beef with it is, since this comes out of X-Men First Class, the story of Days of Future Past, you know, we all know it, and this is not it. It is too Wolverine-centric. I understand Wolverine is your cash cow, but that story is really more of a Kitty Pryde story, because she's the one who went back. But the fact that, you know, they had Wolverine with Charlie and Magneto saying, look, you need to go back and handle this, fine. But if they can bring some of the visuals from the book, which I know they won't do, but if they could do that, it could be awesome. But the trailer does pique my interest, because, you know, Singer has been on top of his game. I can't hate too much. You know, once I got past the point that it's not the story that I know, you know, it's something else, then I just let it go and see where it's going to take me. But I'm curious to see where they do go with this thing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I noticed in the trailer, Wolverine, he looks old, right? Like he has the gray hair. But I was trying to piece together. I don't know if you saw the Wolverine movie that was recently released. But at the end, there's that whole sort of setup, what I assume was a setup for this movie, where Magneto and Xavier get him at the airport. But that was like in present day. And I was trying to figure out why in the movie he's old and they're showing like the older one going back. Like I was like, what happened between the period of the end of Wolverine when they get him to this? Seemed like, unless there's something they're going to explain why he's all of a sudden older. So I don't know. I thought that was a little continuity weird. But this trailer was good.
Well, Go ahead. Here's another continuity issue I have. Bryan Singer, I'm looking at this comic book resources piece. I sent it to you guys on Twitter. Bryan Singer says the reason why Wolverine was chosen to go back was because his healing factor will help him survive the process. And to me, I'm like, this is bull. What does his healing factor have to do with... Okay, now we don't know how they're going to send him back. But if you're going to base it on Days of Future Past, people know you send Kitty Pryde's future mind back into her past body. So I'm like, what the hell does a healing factor have to do with that? Especially when we already have Professor X, a precedent with Professor X taking his mind, putting it into another body. There was no healing factor needed to survive that. I understand this is time and space, but it's still a mind going someplace else.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. They're not physically putting his body through the process. It's just his mind. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah, so I call shenanigans and bullshit there, too.
But I will say, I guess from the studio standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world for it to be Wolverine-centric. Yeah. Obviously, you know, he just had a movie, and he's the bigger star out of at least the character in terms of their movie universe. So I can see why they're not going to pick Kitty Pryde to do it. Which isn't to say they don't in the story either. I mean, I haven't seen the movie either, but I just want them to remember they do have Michael Fassbender and Patrick Stewart and the guy, the younger Professor X. These are all great actors in this movie, so hopefully they are utilized.
And they have Ellen Page.
And what's the girl? Obviously, I know they want to use her. I'm surprised they don't put her front and center. The chick who plays in the other franchise that's popping off.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, they have her in there as well. If they was really thirsty, they would have just put her face on the cover and just said, deal with it. But
I'd have been fine with that.
Like, this is a Mystique movie all of a sudden now. We got to cash in, rewrite the script. So I'm still excited to see it. I will say this much. Marvel ain't letting up. I mean, this is a Fox movie, but them trailers don't start off saying Fox or Sony. They start off saying Marvel.
Marvel, yeah.
So Marvel is really putting it down, man, in terms of these comic book movies.
I saw Wolverine whenever it came out. Actually, I think I screened it maybe 2 weeks before it came out. And I typically, with sequels or prequels or what have you, I'll try to go back and watch the films previous, but I'd only seen the first two X-Men, so I'm not a big X-Men connoisseur, so I didn't know the finer things.
You didn't miss anything in the third one.
So I watched Wolverine. I don't find the character all that interesting either. But funny story at the end, Mike, you mentioned the after the credit tag scene. People in the screening went nuts, right? And I'm sitting there going, I have no idea who these people are. I didn't know. I mean, I knew Professor X, but I didn't know the other guy. I'm like, well, obviously this is important for some reason. And, you know, if everyone who's here is going crazy, I definitely missed something. So I ended up not even writing an actual review of Wolverine just because I didn't think that I could do it a service, since I didn't know a lot of the, you know, character stuff. But watching this trailer, it's kind of the same thing. I reckon, oh, there's Halle Berry. Oh, there's, you know, but I don't really know who they are to the story. So at some point before this one comes out, I'll probably go back and watch them all. That way I can, you know, do a better accurate assessment of it and see what I think of it.
Well, I tell you what, Big Sexy, give us a quick sort of layman's synopsis of what Days of Futures Past, the book, comic book that the stories were?
Oh, very simple. It was an X-Men Volume 1, issues 141, 142, and the book opens up with a future where mutants are all herded up and locked up in the Pokey. It is Magneto, Professor X, Kitty Pryde, and a young, actually an old Franklin Richards, and they're making a little resistance move, and somehow they get Kitty's mind to go back to present-day Kitty, and all of a sudden she's in the danger room, and she freaks. Well, she doesn't freak out. She passes out, wakes up, sees Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler, who she did not really click with at that time as a teenager, but as an adult, you know, she loves him, and she wakes up, sees him, and just freaks out. Oh, my God, Kurt, I made it, I made it. And then Wolverine comes in. They're like, what's the problem here? She tells them what's going on, and Wolverine said, she moves, she smells like a woman. I believe this. And then the B story was the Freedom Fighters. Oh, no, excuse me, Freedom Force. Was that the group? The Evil Mutant group?
Well, at the time, they were the Brotherhood of Evil
Brotherhood. They were still the Brotherhood, you're right. They were the Brotherhood, and they're starting some stuff because they're going to take out Senator Kelly, which leads to the Mutant Registration Act, which starts the whole, you know, persecution in the future. So that's why Kitty's there to stop that. And they're going from the present day to the future day. And one of the best visuals was when Wolverine in the future walks into the mutant area and he's got the little gray temples happening and he roughs up some guys. And during the fight scene, Colossus, and this is old school, he goes to Colossus and makes me up a fastball special. He picks up Wolverine, throws him at the Sentinel. And Wolverine says, I'm going to gut this guy from head to hips. And as Wolverine flies through the air like a missile, Sentinel turns around, boom, incinerates him. All you see is chrome adamantium skeleton on the floor. And right before that and right after that, actually, Storm tried to go take out the two Sentinels. They got her. It's a very violent outcome in the future if they can't, you know, rectify this.
Yeah, and it, at the time when it came out, I think it was in the 80s.
It was 81, yeah. 81. It was mind-blowing.
Definitely, yeah, it was definitely like something you had never seen before. It was like, whoa, and you're seeing characters getting killed and the future, you know, very bleak sort of future. I think there was one of the covers, and it had like wanted posters. And then,
that was
like,
141,
on the
bottom, yeah.
There was the names.
Yeah, one of the most iconic comic book covers ever.
People have ripped that cover off for years.
And like some of the characters were dead, you know, it said dead or deceased or something, I think. Like, yep. And some of the major heroes. It's a very interesting story. So we're curious to see. That's why when we see the title of this movie and we know what that story is, we're like, wow, they're going to do that? Okay. Let's see how they pull that off.
So. Well, I got two last points. One was, in the trailer, they show old Professor X talking to young Professor X saying, we need you to hope again. Now, they're saying that this is a continuation from X-Men 3. So we see Professor X got old. So I'm like, why are you saying you need the old Professor X to hope again if we see that he went on and lived his long life, had the X-Men, found Cyclops, Storm, and Wolverine? So I guess things are going to change, but and I guess we need to have a wait and see. But I'm like, that right there has me, okay, wait a minute. What happened in the past when we already know this is where you get to this point?
Right. Yeah, it is.
And like, more so of a comic book level. Is
When does it come out? When does the film come out?
May 23rd, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, they're probably, you know, a lot of times some of those scenes in the trailer may not even end up in the film. I mean, they're probably still editing, still shooting. So you never know.
But it's like, why would you tease us like that to have us think one way? But
to get you talking about it. We're talking about it now. So
And remember, Thor's coming out here in a couple weeks, so I'm sure they want to have us all marveled up, ready
for
the next.
It's like you said, you know, Marvel's got DC in the bitch roll as far as film's concerned. You know, you got Thor coming out. They had the Captain America trailer. Now they have the X-Men trailer. There have been whispers about a Justice League movie, but that kind of came and went. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it kind of came and died. And Marvel's like, you know what? Let us put a squash on that, and here comes more of our stuff.
Yeah. And one last thing I just want to throw in here. You know, we've talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, consensus of not really meeting expectations. But I did think it was interesting. I just read that one of the upcoming episodes will deal with the aftermath of the events in the Thor 2 movie. And I believe it's an episode that comes out maybe a week or 2 weeks after the movie has opened. But it's a tie-in to the movie somehow. There's something that happens in the movie that has dire consequences for a character on the TV show. I only bring that up to say that sort of stuff is very interesting, sort of maneuvering to do something like that. That's what I think hopefully we'll see, like, as they like to say, the synergy or the connectivity between what we saw in that movie and what they can show us on the screen. So tying them together a little bit more tightly. Maybe that, hopefully that makes the show better and the events more important. But I do like the idea of that, as long as they don't do it cheaply. Any thoughts on that from anybody?
All right. I'm just waiting to see what they're going to do. I'm kind of curious, but we'll see what happens.
All right. So I wanted to switch gears a little bit here. We definitely did some heavy movie talk. I know a lot of us here are into music as well. And this is something that I heard about maybe a month ago. I didn't read a lot into it, but now definitely a definite lawsuit story. So I want to talk about Marvin Gaye and Robin Thicke. So there's a great article on Billboard.com. Title of it is Marvin Gaye's Family Sues EMI for Blurred Lines Profits, Gay Catalog Rights, and Conflict of Interest with Robin Thicke. Now, this is the great thing because, as you heard in the beginning, we had a lawyer on the program who can help sort of decipher and navigate us through this situation. Now, I'm pretty sure you had a chance to read this article.
Yes, I did.
Give us a little bit of what's going on. I know we all heard that Robin Thicke, T.I., and Pharrell were doing a preemptive strike, I should say, against the Marvin Gaye family in terms of the song Blurred Lines, which is unheard of, in my opinion, to do something like that. Very disrespectful, in my opinion. But now the Marvin Gaye family is going after EMI, who controls the publishing. So talk a little bit about that from what you've read. What's your takeaway on this?
Well, very simple, you know, and I don't know the inner workings of the Robin Thicke brain trust, but when they filed this preemptive suit back in August, essentially preventing Marvin Gaye's estate from making a move claiming that the song has been complete, you know, bastardization of Got to Give It Up. All that did in my mind was call attention to the song being a bastardization. That was stupid. And now once they've done that, you know, Gaye's people have responded saying, look, the songs are similar. I listened to both of them. Yeah, you can hear it. And I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but you can hear it. Now, the problem with EMI is EMI, as administrators of Gaye's intellectual property and his music, they have a duty to protect his copyrights. Now, let me use a good example involving you, Mike. If you, Mike, come to me and say, Mark, why don't you administer The Art of Seduction for me? Fine. I'm watching out for it, making sure it doesn't get, you know, plagiarized or whatnot. All of a sudden, Big Ken, no disrespect, Ken, just thinking about you, Big Ken comes to me with a song called Lady's Choice, which contains a lot of elements in your song. So I'm representing both of you. And all of a sudden, you hear on Big Ken's podcast your song within his context. So you're going to call me and be like, what the fuck? Because there, right there, I'm conflicted. I can't represent you and his interest. Because anytime a lawyer is conflicted like that, he's got to step out. So EMI, in this case, is representing the Gaye estate and Robin Thicke's publishing people. And they should not let this happen. This should not have happened from day one. What should have happened was, like with Hammer back in the day, Thicke should have just went to Gaye's people, wrote a check, we're taking your shit, here it is, boom. But no. Thicke and Pharrell and T.I. are saying that they wrote it with no, you know, knowledge of Marvin's song, which is bullshit, because in the article there's an interview that says they wanted to capture that vibe. And that reminded me of the Michael Bolton Isley Brothers situation back in 93, I believe, on the song Love is a Wonderful Thing. Michael Bolton, who was a huge, huge soul music aficionado and Isley Brothers fan, uses that bridge from their song, and they're pretty much identical. And yet, in court documents, he claims he's never heard the song. Get the fuck out. Really? Come on.
Yeah, man. I remember that.
You know, so he took it in the wallet. The same thing is going to happen here. Had Robin Thicke just been above board and said, you know what, we're going to, you know, use elements of this song, let's write them a check, and go a step further like Hammer did and give a co-writing credit, none of this would have happened. But they, for some reason, someone in their brain trust said, you know what, let's just go for the gusto. Let's send a preemptive strike, which was stupid, because not only is Marvin Gaye an American icon, there it is, I said it, but he's no longer with us. You can't rip off somebody's work when they're no longer with us. All that does is make you look like a bastard. So Robin Thicke should enjoy his 15 minutes right now, because the clock is ticking. He is not going to win this case. No way. Now, as far as the Gaye estate reasserting control from EMI, that may be a difficult issue to prove, because granted, they did breach fiduciary duties, but is it enough to cause a rescission of a contract? That I don't know, but I will be following this case as it develops.
All right, man. Great breakdown on that. Now, Anthony, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, from the first start, the moment you hear Blurred Lines, you hear Got to Give It Up. It's just bull. It's total bull to say, oh, it's a vibe, it's a feeling. You can hear that it was totally sampled. They just sped up a couple of things. They added in keyboards in certain section. It's Got to Give It Up. Secondly, this reminds me of, I did an interview with QT3, Quincy's boy, a couple of years back. And this kind of relates to Prince, is that he went through a similar situation with Prince, because he used Do Me Baby for Tupac's To Live and Die in L.A. And he tried to say that, oh, it's not the difference. We created that from scratch. It borrowed some elements, but Prince was mad. And I never really heard that before, but I went and looked and listened to Live and Die in L.A., and I'm like, damn, that is Do Me Baby. And he had to pay up, and Robin Thicke, you're going to have to pay up too.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe that Robin's, you know, you mentioned the brain trust. I think maybe it might have been a guy named Robert Winkle, lawyer at law, who's a.k.a. Vanilla Ice. Remember his great video clip when he's like,
oh! Dum, 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 dum. He added the ping. It's not the same. We put a ping at the end of it, and so it's different.
That's, maybe that's what they were
trying to say, too. And I'm like, no.
I don't know what these cats are thinking, man, but...
In prep for the show, I went and listened to both tracks back to back. I'm a big fan of Marvin Gaye, and Got to Give It Up is probably one of my favorite songs of his. Now, Mark, if they went in the studio and he says, okay, I want this vibe, this Got to Give It Up vibe, and then they create that vibe without taking anything, lifting anything from the recording Got to Give It Up, isn't that okay to do if they recreate it without actually taking the keyboard part or taking a scream or a hand clap or a riff or whatever? Is it that okay to do?
You mean recreating it organically with like just, no I'm not saying song at all?
Yeah, I'm saying like recreating just because to me they sound similar, but they don't sound the same. I can hear, you know, a couple of beat changes that kind of sound the same, but it doesn't sound like they lifted anything directly off the record.
Well, the thing is, they didn't sample anything, but it's an I think it's called interpolation.
Interpolation, yeah.
Yeah, but you're taking it's a musical composition, mm-hmm. and they just interpolated it.
Because I
owe them. You built on the original musical composition.
You know,
it's like when Prince goes and like you look at the Let's Go Crazy he's been doing for the Live Out Loud tour.
Right.
I mean, it's.
You mean Godzilla? Yeah. Or Frankenstein? Excuse me, Frankenstein.
Well, no. I mean, the track Let's Go Crazy. His part. I mean, it's a reimagined, a little different vibe to the song, but it's built on the original Let's Go Crazy.
You know, it's like, and it's a better. I would say it's like this. It's like when you first heard Housequake. And you're like, okay, he's doing a James Brown, you know, you can hear like James Brown influence, but right. He's not lifting or replaying parts of a James Brown song that we all know and love. And then not coming back to you saying, it ain't got nothing to do with James Brown. but let me file a suit against
you. Yeah, just in case. The reason why I asked that question is because I have the CD, so I pulled the booklet out of it just to look at the liner notes and see if there's a sample credit, and there's not a sample credit. Now, Pharrell's been around a long time. Uh-huh. I mean, he would be – seems to me, if he did sample it, he would be smart enough, or his people around him would be smart enough to say, hey, you sampled this. You need to – you know, we need to pay the Gay Estate. Let's put a sample credit in there. I mean, I know he's sampled stuff in the past, and I know he's – you know, he's done that. So it would seem to me that in this case that maybe they didn't – they don't feel that they sampled it. That's why there's no sample credit. That's why there's no payment to the family.
Well, it could be the other part, too, is in, and I didn't know this at first, but the whole EMI element to it. So let's say they – obviously they record these records, and they have to submit this to the label and to get clearance to put this out, because they're not going to just blindly put those records out. And right. They know when how deep it can get. Like, they wouldn't have got any profits if it's not clear properly. But if EMI is representing – the interest of Robin Thicke, and they got the interest of the Gay stuff, they might have just said, you know what, we don't need to clear this. It's exactly. Us. It's our shit. We don't exactly. need to clear this. You keep all the money. We're going to get our money. F the Gays.
Yeah.
You know, that I would not be surprised if they took that sort of stand where it's like, you know what, he's hot. He's about to be the next guy. You know, he's going to be the one this year. You know, they know what's going to come out and what he's going to come out against. So they figure, hey, this is our – is even a guy – was it the label head in the article says this is our golden goose or whatever.
Golden goose, yeah.
Yeah, don't mess up. So, you guys so are in messing other words, up his situation. So they know what they're doing.
So in other words, they went, Billy, this is a business. You ain't thinking about
that. And basically. It ain't no different than what they've been doing with a lot of soul artists from back in the days. And this is another example of the same sort of thing. It's a little more tricky. A little more, you know, sneaky, but it's the same. And this time, they got legitimate, sort of black, give them a pass, producers and rappers to co-sign it. Well, let's put Pharrell's name on the lawsuit, put T.I.'s name on the lawsuit, so it can't be racial, because they on it.
Yeah.
You know, they know how to play the game.
No, it's well, not you know, racial. It's just a money thing, that's all. Yeah. And the fact that Thicke... In the article, they referenced the After the Dance lift, and I played that this morning. I'm like, yeah, he did it again. So, dude, they called it in the article a fixation on Marvin's music. I don't want to go that far, but, you know, he certainly leans a lot to the Marvin Gaye music.
I will. There's a song on his last album. It's called the album before last. It's called Million Dollar Baby, and it is the music for Trouble Man. And I'm not, it is the music from Trouble Man. It's not a recreation. It's not a sample. And he sings different lyrics in the same tune of Trouble Man. I think the song is the same length as Trouble Man, even the bridge and, you know, got me singing. Yeah. I mean, he does that in the song. So, but yeah. that song wasn't a single and it wasn't a release. So of course it wasn't a hit. So, I mean, if anything, they would have more cause to be upset over that song than this song. And is it a money thing that Blurred Lines is, you know, making trillions of dollars? And so, hey, we gotta get a piece of that.
Well, you know, it's, you know, there's another artist that does the same. I'm a big D'Angelo fan.
Yeah.
And if you listen to his Voodoo album, a lot of his songs, they replay direct music from other songs and make new songs out of it and all this sort of stuff. But they give credit in the credits. And I imagine they're paying whatever the mechanical royalties or whatever it is they need to do. Where in this case, this guy chose to act like he didn't know who these other artists were. It was all his sort of original compositions. And to me, it just comes off in terms of artistically, it's disrespectful. And it looks like he's just taking somebody else's hard work.
Exactly.
And then turning it into his fame. And like he's saying, F you to an icon, which... is ridiculous. It'd be something different if he had lifted from some one hit wonder R&B jam from back in the something and only a few of us remembered it. But he pulling from Motown, pulling from Marvin. We all know it, dog. Like, we're all connected. See, back in the days, you could have sampled a cut and nobody would have known what it was and you got a pass. But now we all know the music. We all have access to it. So you can't, it's disrespectful to the fans.
Yeah, I think he should have given a sample credit. I don't understand why they didn't give Sapper credit.
Well, it's like Mike said, since EMI is in bed with both of them, EMI probably said, you know, we'll take care of this.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
And failed to do so because they're in a clear conflicted position, and the gays are like, what the fuck? And the thing is, the gay family may not have even known about it until that lawsuit came their way. You know, this could have been squashed without the lawsuit.
Yeah, when this song started to really take off, I bet you that was one of the first times, like anybody else, they probably heard it too, like, because they were never notified. They're like, well, wait a minute. That sounds like. And when I saw that was Nona Gay was a part of this, he already lost in my mind. That's my baby. What the hell?
Oh, well, there's another song on the Blur Lines album that sounds just like Glow of Love. It's called Get in My Way. And so he may have opened the floodgates for, you know, people to come back and sue, because when I first heard it, I said, wow, that's Glow of Love. And I go and look at the booklet and no sample credit. I'm like, well, that's pretty much sounds like the Glow of Love to me. Maybe maybe my ears are wrong, but sounds like it to me. So.
Yeah, I hope one of these cats, these new guys, do that with Prince, because he's all ready to go. He'll spend his whole fortunes to protect his music. So I can't wait for them to pull that madness. But it's just not a good look for R&B, particularly that he's very popular right now, and could arguably be the most popular R&B male artist right now. And the fact that he's Robin Thicke. And he's doing this. It's not a good look, man.
No, I agree. Yeah.
The thing is, you know, as far as Prince goes, if I released a single today called Little Blue Hugo, I'm sure he would be giving me a call. Just on the title alone. And I could say, I never heard that song. What are you talking about? Get the fuck out. Yeah, you know, Robin Thicke has no credibility. You know, his producers have no credibility. And... you know, and since this case was filed in the Central Federal District of California, that's down in Fresno, you know, and I'm on that network because here in Sacramento, we're in the Eastern District, I'm going to pull those papers. Every time something gets filed, I'm going to try to pull it because I'm curious about this. I've always followed cases in the music industry that involve creativity, and I want to see what's going to happen here because Alan Thicke is just flat out wrong, and so is EMI.
So you don't think Robin's suit? You don't think?
Did I say Alan Thicke? I'm sorry, Robin Thicke.
You don't think his suit has any chance?
Hell no.
And then the gays—they've got a good case.
The gays have a great case against him. Now the EMI, you know, conflicted position. Again, I don't think rescission is the adequate remedy for what they're claiming here, but I'd have to double check that.
Okay.
And lastly, when they have the Soul Train Awards, he better not get nominated. And if he does, the community needs to stand up and boo his ass.
Oh, Soul Train, they're saying an article, he may lose his Grammy nomination for Song of the Year. Get the fuck out. No.
And they need somebody needs to pull, I'm actually more disgusted with Pharrell. Somebody needs to pull his coat. Say, stop. Don't let them people gas your head. Stop. Because this is ridiculous. You know better. You're artists.
I listened to the song this morning before we, you know, started recording, and I'm watching the video. Now, aside from the girls in the video, how you doing, ladies? You know, the song is just like, really? This is Marvin Gaye? Come on. It's like you take Marvin Gaye's song, play it, and you get a couple of people over that just saying, Blurred Lines. That's all it is. That's all it is. It's bullshit. He's a thief. He knows he's a thief, and he's going to get hit in the wallet. That simple.
Oh, and actually, we got a special guest here real quick. He wanted to get on the mic and speak on this. This is my uncle, Tommy. Uncle Tommy, hold on. Hey, this is Uncle Tommy. Let me tell you something about this. Now, I'm going to give you the real scoop on this situation. See, this white boy, he already stole the sister. Now you're going to let him steal Marvin's music? You niggas disgust me. I just don't know how y'all let it go. You get him up. Y'all done built him up. Sister's building him up. And now he's stealing our music, too. And this is like my man Ice Cube said, here's what they think about you. I'm out of here.
All right.
You know, let me drop one more little tidbit on this guy. I think of people like Eminem, and I think of the group Living Color. Both of these, you know, people are doing things that people of their complexion aren't supposed to do. Why? They do it because of a genuine love for the music and art form. I don't get that vibe from Thicke. I think he's an opportunistic piece of shit, and this is going to come out in the end.
All right, we get off.
I said it.
We'll get off Marvin.
I'm like, to be honest, I don't think he had to work that hard to get Paula Patton, but that's just me.
You might be right.
I think she might have been the basis for Olivia Pope.
Wow. Now that's another episode. All right, we'll get off of our conspiracy brother topic. All right. Next up. We're going to put the conspiracy brother on just for a second. So there's the new Anchorman 2 movie is coming out very soon. I actually have not seen the first one, but some people I would imagine may consider like a cult hit or a classic. I know it was a very popular movie, but there are trailers that they've been showing. I think there are now two different trailers. I was at the movies the other day. They showed a trailer for this movie. I know that what's the young girl, black girl, fine as hell. She's in this. She was in. I think she's on The Game now. She was in one of those. This is terrible.
Lauren London?
No. She's been in The Game a little longer. She was in that movie with Tyrese that one time.
That's Taraji P. Henson.
Waist Deep, is that the movie?
Yes.
Okay, I know you're talking about, but I can't think of her name.
She's on the tip of my tongue.
Megan
Good. Yes, how could I forget? So Megan Good is in this movie. Now, there is a scene from the trailer of the first trailer that was released months ago, and there's a scene where the main character goes to a black family's house for dinner or something, and they go on to it's a comedy movie, so they're going into these heavily stereotypical black jokes, which I'm not going to lie, they are funny. It's kind of funny, but when you're sitting, I'm not used to sitting in a theater and seeing a white person go in on a movie. And in a trailer, all these scenes are isolated, and that, it's very quick. But I was kind of like, damn, I didn't think they would have the balls to go there. Like, he was clowning on black stuff, right? It's like, okay. And it got a lot of laughs. Now, I live in a predominantly white neighborhood. And so, some people, and I look to my right, I look to my left. So you know what? I swear it's before Django, but that might be going too far back. But anyway, I was kind of like, it was funny, but that fun. It's all right. So yesterday I'm at the movies and they show a new trailer for this movie. And there's a part where the lead guy, he's at the TV network, and I think they're introducing him to some of the new anchors. And Megan Good's character comes up and he's like, hey, this is such and such. And he stops and looks, you're black. You're black. And people,
he stole that from Lethal Weapon 2 or 3. That's where he got that from.
Oh, two. Right.
Lethal Weapon 2.
Joe Pet. And I'm like, damn, what? This movie is going to be interesting. I just kind of thought it was strange because you don't normally see them going in like that. So I don't know if anybody else has seen these trailers. I think, Sean, have you seen
the trailers? I've seen the first one, the one he's at the dinner. I haven't seen the new one. The movies that I go to now, they don't have trailers before them. So,
he threw that in there. I don't see the movies with you, rest of you regular Negro. No, I'm just playing.
No, I go to the screenings, so the screenings don't have trailers at the beginning. But so I usually see them on YouTube, so I can't judge the reaction as far as what other people thought. But I was kind of like, I was like, wow, they're gonna go there and. In this day and age, post Trayvon and all of that, but we'll see. Maybe those scenes, maybe they'll get cut out or changed or edited. I'm from San Diego, so of course the movie takes place in San Diego, so it's big here, and there's all kinds of different promotions and whatnot going on. So it'll be interesting to see too what radio stations link into it what other partnerships and what have you. So. Yeah, and I've only seen the first one once. Not a fan. I'm not a Will Ferrell fan at all. So I'll have to see it, but I'm not. It's not one of those ones that I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, I just thought it was really odd to me. I was like, man, because you don't normally see even so-called black movies. they don't really go in on white people super hard, like, you know, in the trailer. And the thing is, normally you don't see, you only see those trailers when you go to other black movies. So right. Usually a large black audience anyway. So I just thought it was interesting. Again, I'm not bothered by it, but it did make me pause. I was like, wow, okay, these motherfuckers got jokes. Let's go. I know that Kanye West is in this movie. I think another rapper. I remember hearing them filming scenes months ago. So just wanted to throw it out there. I thought it was interesting. Shifting gears again. DC Comics, or DC Entertainment, I think that's what it's called now, moves from the iconic place of being in New York to L.A., I think I'm Burbank somewhere. Big Sexy, you had brought this up, or brought it to my attention. What does this mean? Is this anything different for DC? Is it going to change the books, or is this more synergy for the movies?
Clearly it's a synergistic relationship, capitalization with them and Warner Brothers. And I remember you sent me a link or in an email this morning, and I went through that, and this was talked about back in 2010. So when I thought about it this morning, I thought this had already taken place. So now that they're doing it, you know, right now, they're going to try to capitalize on their movie properties and their other media positioning, because in the film world, Marvel is killing them. Now, granted, they're killing Marvel in direct-to-DVD cartoons, but the profit margins are so much more, you know, infinitesimal compared to the film. And let's face it, editorially, the New 52 is bullshit. You know, line-wide, it's just not a good look. They need to have some event and go back to normal continuity, because it's just not good. So maybe this change will spark some creativity, get some new people in there who care about the product, and we'll get this thing back on the right path.
Yeah, I will say that DC, though, is really doing their thing in terms of the small screen. Like,
they're killing the small screen.
Arrow was great. You know, I never watched it, but Smallville went on for like 10 years.
10 years, yeah, 10 years.
That's a long run. So they definitely have some good stuff. Anthony, you have any thoughts on this?
Well, to echo Big Sexy's comments, they really just need a overhaul of the creative process at DC as they look at not only just the comic books, but what they're doing with the movie properties. Whatever they're doing in television animation, they need to leave those people alone. The fact that they let Bruce Timm walk out the door, that's their own black eye. But other than that, they need to leave that division alone. The comic books and the movies, they need an overhaul. The one thing that I noticed that what makes Marvel really successful is the fact that you have comic book people making films about comic books. They're not trying to reinvent anything. They have a philosophy. They have a strategy. They have an end goal, and they're executing it. When you look at Warner Brothers and to a certain extent with Fox and Sony with the Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men property, they're film people. And they look at, this is source material, and this is how we interpret this. And to me, that's the problem, that they don't respect the material. Or you get people like a Bryan Singer, like a Sam Raimi, who is actually good except for that third film, Spider-Man, that have to reimagine it or have to find a way. Oh, even Christopher Nolan, they have to find a way to make it their film. Christopher Nolan, he came up with a really good story, but at the end of the day, he had to interpret Batman in his own way and had to make it more realistic, have to make it fit in the real world, which, you know, somebody needed to pull him to the side. It's like, dude, you're doing a comic book about some guy, a rich guy, a rich billionaire who dresses up as a bat to fight crime. It's like, what realism do you really need to bring to the source material? And that's why Marvel is killing it. And hopefully this move here will get some more creative people that respect the comic book, that respect the source material, and can put together a plan for all of the DC properties.
The only thing I throw into that, though, is the Green Lantern movie. Wasn't Geoff Johns like the writer of that movie? Or he was like very much involved in that. And he's the deep comic dude, and that was a horrible movie.
Like, oh, that movie was terrible. So
if you look on the surface, the story is there, because you remember when you go from a story and script to actual production, there's a big fall off, because you are into the interpretation of the producers, the interpretation of the director,
right?
But the story itself was pretty decent.
I agree completely. Yeah, the director was foul. You know, they should have someone else in there. Because I think, like you said earlier, Mike, I think this director in Green Lantern was all about making the property his vision. And it's about him. It's not about you, man. It's about the character that's got, you know, 50, 60 years of history. And you have an opportunity to build on that. But, you know, he wanted to do things his way and made a shitty movie.
All right. Sean, I don't know if you're a big comic guy. But you have anything?
Go ahead.
To echo Big Sexy's point, the director of Green Lantern is a now 70-year-old Martin Campbell.
Whoa.
Okay, I think that answers the question, doesn't it?
As far as
that
we
probably
know,
already has. I mean, okay, he did GoldenEye, Casino Royale. That's okay.
Well, there you go.
But I'm like, still, he probably has no affinity for comics.
Go ahead, Sean.
Okay, as far as them moving to, I mean, it would seem just to make perfect sense to be in California and in that area, because that's where films are made, the majority of them. So you would have the people there that's able to be creative, and the actors, and the access to the editor. I mean, the whole studio system. So it would only make sense for them to be there. So.
All right. Jumping along, I've been hearing some rumors about the new Star Wars movie that I think one of the writers has left, the original screenwriters left, and now J.J. Abrams has stepped in to sort of jump in there and put his pen down on paper, and hearing rumors that the producer, or maybe Kathleen Kennedy, maybe wanted to push it to 2016, but Disney is like, it's got to be 2015. Does that frighten anybody that there's...
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
They shouldn't even be making them, in my humble opinion. I mean, the last three, episodes 1, 2, and 3, were horrible. Let's just say that they were, with the exception of the third one, the first two are pretty much unwatchable. Revenge of the Sith... Even though you know where the story is going, at least it has a couple of good set pieces in there. You know, I don't know where else they can really go. I know they're picking up from Jedi, however many years passed, but I think they should just let this dog lie. Let us keep our memories of the first three and call it a day.
I disagree a little bit, simply because I'm looking at the success of the Star Trek Next Generation franchise and, you know, what spawned from that. It was Rick Berman who stepped in after Roddenberry passed away and stayed completely respectful to the source material and just built from what he already had. Now, if they could get someone in with that type of creativity and respect for the Lucas original trilogy, this could happen, but you have to find that right person.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. If they could find it, but... You know, who's to say that? I mean, I love Abrams, and I like what he did with the Star Trek. I don't know if he could follow that same storyline or philosophy, but just after suffering through the first three, or the second three, however you want to say it, just I'm just hoping, as a movie fan, that they're good movies. But my heart says no.
Yeah. I understand why they're going to make them. Obviously, it's a cash move.
You know, yes.
And I'm not mad about that. That's the business. But it just has to have that quality. You know, it's trying to recreate magic. Lucas couldn't do it with the second movies. So maybe someone else can. But, you know, I always have to keep in mind that, and as I'm actually reading The Making of Empire Strikes Back now. And when I read that, I realize there was just so much magic and passion and newness and a sense of wonder about what they were doing that it's hard to, 30-some-odd years later or more, try and recreate that. It's tough. You know, in a very cynical sort of world, movie making at this point, it's hard to do. So, I mean, the fact that they're bringing back Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, and Carrie Fisher... As I looked at her, and you said this, as I looked at Harrison Ford in Ender's Game, I mean, he looked good for his age, but I was like, damn, he's old.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, he's hella old. Like, he's, you know, and not that he didn't look good, but I mean, I, in my mind, picture Han Solo. He's a very young guy.
Yeah.
Even Indiana Jones is a young guy. And for them to try and make me understand that this older gentleman is that same dude. He cannot do what he did back then. He doesn't even act the same way.
Right, yeah.
So it's a hard sell. And then let alone Mark Hamill, bless his heart, he does not look like Luke. Unless they have him on some super top secret program, weight loss, whatever, that's going to be a hard sell.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher, she's not a great actor. It's just going to be hard, man, for it to be a... They'll be the anchor pieces of this movie. And then they're going to have to try and sell us on some new characters to take it, the baton. So it's going to be tough, man. It's going to be tough. I am scared.
Well...
Go ahead.
If I could chime in... I was all for J.J. Abrams taking Star Wars. I thought it was kind of a conflict with Star Trek until I saw Into Darkness.
Which was a terrible movie, but go ahead.
thank you. Yes, it's like I don't have any faith in him doing this right, period. On top of that, he has the worst writing staff with him. Damon Lindelof. Oh my God. How does that guy... I know he's J.J. Abrams' boy, but it's like at some point you got to say, dude, you need to step up or I'm going to bounce you. Because you look at Into Darkness, it's supposed to be, Star Trek was supposed to be rebooted in a new fashion, new things happening, and it was bad. They just used Wrath of Khan. So at that point, I'm like,
they Robin Thicked it. That's what they did.
They Robin Thicked it. Like, this was one of the rants that I had about Into Darkness, and it sounds like I liked it a little bit more than you guys, but why did Khan change his name? Why was it a big secret? And it was like, it was for the audience. It wasn't for the characters, because him being Khan had no significance to them. It only had a significance to the audience. So there's this build-up, because what was his fake Jonathan something or another?
Don Harrison or something like that?
Yeah, and then, you know, he reveals himself as Khan, and it's for the audience to go, oh! But the character's like, yeah, okay, whatever, your name's Khan, cool, you know?
But for Spock, it meant a lot more, apparently.
Well,
Yeah,
that was kind of bad, and then the reversal, Kirk dying, rather. Yeah, they did Robin Thicke. From the original.
There was no respect for the original and the fans who watched it, and it was just as if we've never saw that movie. And we're just,
so is the third one going to be The Search for Kirk? Or are they going to?
horrible!
Man. Oh, I heard. Okay, this will really give you some eye rolls. Apparently, J.J. Abrams was done with Star Trek because he had these grandiose ideas for the Star Trek franchise to go to actually reboot a series, and what he had planned for the third, and apparently there was an issue with CBS. Thank you, CBS, because you're hopefully going to get J.J. Abrams off of this, but then he's going to go ruin Star Wars. But yeah, I'm losing faith in J.J. Abrams. New properties only, do not deal with old stuff.
Well, I can just say is if they screw up this first Star Wars movie, it's over for him, to me. I got.
Oh, they will come for him. You know, the Star Wars people will come for him.
Yeah, it'll be
well, over. If I'm just trying to understand. They have this woman in this position for a reason. She worked with Lucas. You kept her there. This probably was part of the sale, but at the same time, she knows the property. If she's saying push it back, do you considering? I understand there's going to be a ton of money made, but considering the I guess the infamy that the prequels have, why would you not say, no, let's get this right. If we have to push it back, let's push it back.
Yeah, and the studio, they want that money, man. They want... And they already have blockbuster... Sean, are you still with us? I think he's dropping out.
Sean.
He'll drop back in. They want to dominate so hard, but, I mean, Disney needs to slow down just a little bit. They've already got Avengers 2 coming next year. I mean, 2015, and like Ant-Man, and what I mean, they've already probably going to win anyway. But I think they just want to. I mean, I don't know. They just want to destroy the game. I guess like we want Star Wars, Marvel, all at the same time. Like I don't know. They should take it slow.
Hey guys, I dropped out, but I'm back now.
Yeah,
so.
No problem. Oh, so let's move off for that. Unless anybody else anything else to say on the Star Wars thing. All right, so we'll wrap it up. The last two here. Tomorrow People. I know Anthony is a big proponent of this show. I have seen one episode. Thought it was really good. But take us into Tomorrow People.
Oh, Tomorrow People is getting awesome. So the last week, they introduced a apparently – so what's going on is there's the Tomorrow People that have the, these three powers, telepathy, teleportation, and telekinesis. And they're being hunted by this covert rogue group called Ultra that want to take them out. Then there's a subplot of the main character, Steven. His father's, I guess he's Neo or whatnot. He's had all these grandiose ideas of where the Tomorrow People should go. And I guess he has an extra boost of power as he can stop time. So on last week's episode, one of the love interests, Kara, was captured. And they were going to remove their powers. And at the last minute, he decided, let me be the one to do it. And he stopped time and saved the powers. So she's still with the Tomorrow People. Unfortunately, she can't be seen out in public or it'll blow Steven's cover. This week, they introduced a older agent of Ultra because Ultra actually employs some of the Tomorrow People as they use them to hunt their own people. And apparently, what we found out that one of their flaws with their abilities is they cannot kill. Jedediah, who runs Ultra, he was trying to figure out a way to block this and allow for these killings, allow for the Tomorrow People to kill. And he ended up doing it. But once he got a thirst for killing, this new guy, I believe his name was Kenan, he went crazy and he's killing the Tomorrow People as well as humans. Then we find out that the head leader of the Tomorrow People, Steven, he worked for Ultra and it was Jedediah's prize Tomorrow People hunter. And come to find out the reason why he left Ultra was now at the end there was this big climactic scene and Steven kills this rogue Tomorrow People Ultra agent and we find out that that's why he left because now he can kill. This series is getting sick. They having a ton of different twists and turns. You people should be watching it. Mike, I know I got you on it. Q-Storm and Big Sexy, y'all should be on it. Sean, you should be watching. It's the best. To me, it's one of the best shows on television right now.
Is this the one with is this the one with Pretty Ricky from Barbershop?
No, Almost Human.
No, that's Almost Human.
Well, that's Almost totally Human. Okay.
Hilarious. This one comes on the CW. This one comes on that one.
And I think I have both on my DVR to check.
I'll take a look at it this week.
And you mentioned last episode, it really takes sort of the best parts of the movie, Push and Jumper, if you remember those movies. There's a lot of action in this show and a lot of great special effects. It's really good.
And they just keep building on the mythology, and you're figuring out where the big, long, I guess the big overarching storyline is finding out where are they getting these powers from, what is going on, is why they, because they even call themselves Homo Superior, why they're making this evolutionary leap. We're finding, then, of course, why Ultra wants to take him down. I guess ultimately it's going to be revealed that they want to use him as weapons, but they can't control them because they're too powerful and they have that you can't kill. Because, you know, everything always comes down to what can the army do with new powers and new technology.
All right. Definitely check it out. And Sean did bring up a show that is definitely on my radar, Almost Human, starring Michael Ealy and Carl, the guy who plays Dredd, Dr. Bones from the...
Carl
Urban. Yes.
Why do I know that name?
He was Bones in the new Star Trek.
Oh, that movie was bullshit, but I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, he was Dredd. Dredd was a dope movie. If you guys haven't seen that, you got to see Dredd, Judge Dredd. So yeah, him and Michael Ealy, it's a futuristic movie, TV series. It looks pretty good. I believe the first 3 or 5 minutes are online now, some sort of preview or something. So there you go. Lastly, Arrow. Is that a CW show? CW show. Another
same night.
DC show, superhero show. And, you know, I was very suspicious of this show first season. But I was shocked. I was like, this is really good. It's dark. It's hardcore. And this season two, they even go deeper into the more the comic elements, and they're introducing more characters. Now they have introduced Black Canary. And there's a twist on who that person is. They've mentioned Ra's al Ghul, or Ghul, however you say his name, is playing into this. Very well done show.
They brought in Brother Blood as well in the last episode.
Really?
Yes.
Was that to do with the guns?
I think it was the last scene where they
Don't tell me.
You haven't got there? Okay, that gets revealed, and the new character that they introduced on the show, I kind of felt, some type of way about him, like there's more to him. And at the end, when you find out, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense now.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very fast-paced show. I love it.
The other thing is, I think this might be the first television comic book retcon. Because seriously, they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who the character is at the end, it should become, as far as Black Canary, it becomes really obvious. But that was clearly a retcon. Because it just doesn't make any sense, the story that they're telling.
You mean in its own universe, they're retconning?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
I mean, has anybody seen the this Wednesday's episode?
Yeah, I just seen half of it.
Oh, okay.
But well, I know who she is, though. I saw that part.
Yeah, so last season, it was all, they had it done one way. And I guess they wanted to bring Black Canary in, and they that was a retcon. I'm sorry, that was a retcon. Because she was dead.
Yeah.
She was... They were not thinking about bringing her back.
Right on. All right, so that's Arrow. Man, what do we got here? I think we've went through all of our topics. Anybody have anything else they wanted to drop in? Anything?
Okay, let me drop this in. Every time I hear you guys talk about Tomorrow People, maybe I'm old, but I just keep hearing Ziggy Marley in my head.
Tomorrow People. different thing there. All right.
I have something that's kind of off topic, but it kind of relates to our Marvin Gaye story. I have a Snoop Dogg Prince story.
Okay.
So I don't know if you watch GGN, but Snoop Dogg's YouTube news show, Mock News Show. But he goes in on Prince a couple of times. And the backstory of that is that Snoop is boys with Sugar Free. And I don't know if you know, but back in 2005, Sugar Free had this really hot hip-hop song called Pimp, which sampled The Times Cool.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, you just go look it up. It's pretty tight. It's pretty tight for a rap song. So I was some of his people was around in the office when I was still working at my old job, and we got to talking, and I just was like, why is Snoop keep going in on Prince? And he told me the backstory. So apparently, Sugar Free went to Moore's End of Time, like, hey, we want to sample Cool. And everything was, they were like, yeah, go with it. I think even he even shouts out Moore's Day on the track. They had it pressed, it was making the rounds on out here on Power 106. Everything was going cool until apparently Prince heard the track. And he shut that shit down. He's like, I don't like it. No, be done with it. So apparently, a lot of money was lost. And ever since then, Snoop's been fucked. Yeah. But to make it worse, because it gets worse, so he hates Prince, but Snoop loves The Time. So I had to bring it to his attention that, yeah, you know that's Prince doing all of that stuff, right? He's like, well, yeah, I know he wrote the song, but, you know, that's The Time, that's Morrison them, that's Jimmy Jam, and Jelly Bean. I'm like, nah, that's actually Prince.
Well, you know, Snoop covered Cool on Eagle Trippin'. And it's actually not a bad cover. I mean, he's singing. Teddy Riley produced it, and the only change that he made was he increased the bass line to make it more pronounced. So, doom, doom, doom. It's more of a keyboardy sound than an actual bass sound, but it sounds a little bit better because you can feel it when you're bumping it in your ride. I listen to it all the time.
Well, again, that sounds like another case of Sugar Free. I have no idea who that is. But it sounds like a case of their people not doing their due diligence. You know, they went to Morris Day, but it's not Morris's song. Sorry. You know, they should have went to Prince directly. They should have done their homework and then contacted Prince directly before they pressed anything.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that, just from my understanding of copyrights, I guess it wasn't a direct cover. They sampled it, and I assume their song was not a direct cover of Cool because it was called Pimp, right?
Right.
I was thinking if they had just done a direct cover, there's nothing Prince could have done
exactly
to stop that. But since they didn't do a cover, yeah, I guess I can see where the problems could have happened, or where he has the power to shut it down.
And again, you know, from Prince's standpoint, if it's his song, which we all know it is, and all of a sudden, you know, you're hearing about it at the end of the train, that's disrespect right there. I'm like, no, nigga, no, hell no, this is my song. No, fuck you. And that's that. They should have went to him first, hat in hand, and, you know, figured it out. It's like the Godfather movies, man. You just can't Bogart on the Don's territory. You got to go talk to the Don first.
Sad thing about this Don, he would have just still said no.
Oh, you would have said no.
No, sorry. Which sucks, but it is.
Wait, hold up, Big Sexy. You've never listened to Sugar Free Street Gospel?
I'll go a step further. I have no idea who that is.
Dude, yeah, you need to YouTube that. That is one of the hottest albums of 97. I don't think
I've ever heard it either. And I know who Sugar Free is, and I have a couple of the songs, but I don't have that album. I don't think I've ever heard it.
Oh, yeah, you need to listen to that album. That's where he got put on. He has some killer tracks on that.
I'll take a listen, because I have no idea. Then again, I have to, you know, in disclosure, I don't know if you know this, I am not a big hip-hop guy. So that's not something that's going to be great anyway.
Like, you know the phrase, why you bullshitting? That was his song.
I don't know that phrase.
Yeah, you don't know? Wow.
Sorry.
Hilarious. All right. This is where Compton and lawyers meet.
Compton comes to the courthouse.
Well, actually, it probably does a lot. But
I didn't want to say that.
Exactly. Anyway.
I got to whip hard for the West Coast fans.
Actually, all of us are on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Everybody on this phone call, so there you go. All right, fellas, want to thank you for coming through. Definitely, Sean, thanks for coming in. Definitely going to have you on again.
Thank you.
Anthony, second time. Killed it as usual.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. Big Sexy and Sax, sir. Of course, family. And a shout-out to Q-Storm. Couldn't make it today. We got love for you, brother. And also a shout out to Big Ken and Day Dropping, our Prince podcast aficionados.
Day Dropping got one coming for me. You know, and he knows why, too, Mr. Glee. So he and I got to get into this.
That's right.
That should cost him a stripe right there, man. Reduction in rank.
All right.
Wait, did you say Glee?
Glee, yes. We'll explain that another time. Thank you to the listener hanging with us, kicking it. And hey, we'll be back shortly. We'll see you all again here on Podcast Juice.